Good evening. Welcome to Hilchos Purim. Last week we spoke about the mitzvah of Zachar and a little bit about Tainus Esther. Tonight we'll talk about Purim specifically. The Gemara tells us that women, as most of you are obligated in hearing the Megillah both at night and during the day. And the Pesukim say, L'chatchila, a woman should try to hear the Megillah in the context of a minyan. That means if there's a minyan of men, that's great. If there's not a minyan of men, and there are only women, then still they should still try to have 10 women be together as a tzibur of women. As far as, is it okay for a woman to lay the Megillah in front of other women, that's a hot, contested topic. Even in the Heights, it's been a very hot issue. As Rabbi Shechter says, the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch is that it's not okay. I know some of you might have gone to seminaries where they might have specifically done it. Not like Rabbi Shechter understands the Shulchan Aruch, and therefore, because it's hot and contentious and controversial, we're just going to stay clear and say, ask your local Orthodox rabbi, and if that's me, then... at Shank we don't. There are other places in the Heights, but at Shank we don't. Okay, we follow the tradition that we have from Arabeim, and Arabeim have told us that that's not what the Shulchan Aruch reads. Did we speak last week about stealing the Afikoman? No? We did? We did speak about stealing. Okay, so we won't talk about it tonight. Great. I just didn't know where we got up to in my notes. Tonight I want to talk about...
Oh, that's right.
We talked about stealing that. Okay, fine. Just in terms of one of the reasons why we recite four psukim out loud throughout the Megillah is some of the poskim say to keep the kids awake, just like stealing the afikoman is nothing more than to keep the kids awake. And by the way, regarding that Gemara of keeping the kids awake, it came up totally tangentially. So Shank is having this casino night on Lel Purim. So everybody's invited, and even if you don't want to do casino, there's still cupcake decorating, and food and whatever. While I was learning the sugya of gambling, because I wanted to learn the sugya about it so I could give the drash on it this coming Shabbos, I found something fascinating. There's one of the poskim, one of the Rishonim says that gambling is never okay, with one exception. The only time that gambling is okay, he said, is for children on the first day of Pesach. Where does that come from? So, there's a Gemara in Pesach, which is the same Gemara that I mentioned last week. The Gemara says that, the Gemara starts saying that everybody has to drink four cups of wine, including men, women, and children. The Gemara says, four cups of wine to children? What do children, they don't appreciate four cups of wine. They don't appreciate wine. Mato elis, what purpose, what use is there for children who get wine? Rather, you should give them klayot ve'egozim. Klayot ve'egozim, I always understood my whole life, means popcorn. Klayot is like roasted kernels, which is basically like popcorn. Ve'egozim, and some kind of not sweet, some sweets, candies, whatever the old ancient version of sweets were. And if you give them stuff to stay awake at night, then if you give kids candies, they stay awake. And that's the Gemara them says, and that's the same reason why we steal the afikoman, to keep the kids awake. Apparently, this, one of the Rishonim, I don't remember whom, in the context of gambling, says that that's what this Gemara means when we give the kids klayot ve'egozim. It's not that you give them sweets, it's that you're giving them marbles or something, these roasted kernels, not because they're yummy to eat, but because they're going to play some game with actions. Does anyone know the Pesach game? There's a tradition in my family that goes back probably close to 100 years, and this is serious, that's for some reason only played on Pesach, and I bet it's sourced in this sheet that I'm telling you, that only on Pesach. Why do they play this only on Pesach? I have no idea, but this is how it's been done in my family for 3 or 4 generations. At least that I know of, and I assume it came from somewhere. You basically take a bunch of filberts or walnuts, and you put one sort of in a distance, let's say 7 feet away, and all the kids line up and try to shoot their walnut or their filbert, and anyone who hits that walnut that's out there gets everybody else's, which is an early form of, okay, everybody put $5 on the table. Anyone who gets whatever takes the whole pot. That's gambling. So I'm assuming that might even be the game that this opinion was saying, that the only time of gambling is permitted, the only time gambling is ever permitted, according to this opinion, is children, the first day of Pesach. Why? Because they got all their nuts the night before. And what do they do with their nuts? I always thought my whole life that they were sweet, so they ate them and kept them awake at the Seder. Apparently, he's understanding, no, they collected these nuts, not to eat, but to play, to gamble the next day in this gambling game. So, when I saw that discussion of gambling, children gambling, first day of Pesach with their nuts, and he said, what's the source? Because this story about giving out nuts on the first night of Pesach to keep them awake, that just connected gambling with the halachas of reading the four psukim aloud, which is to keep the kids awake, which the Gemara also says the same idea as giving the kids nuts on the first night of Pesach. So we just made an interesting connection between gambling. So if I ever want to give a shiur on Pesach, I could give a shiur on gambling, and I could say, because as an opinion says, the only time you're ever allowed to gamble is the first day of Pesach for children. Okay, so that was a parenthetical as far as last week. Let's begin a new discussion tonight. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nehiyah B'Dvaro. The discussion will be about the chiyuv of women. So women are obligated in a lot of mitzvos, and they're not obligated in other mitzvos. In general, we're familiar with the general klal is that mitzvah seseh shezman grama, they have to do. If it's not the case that it's a mitzvah seseh shezman grama, women don't have to do it. However, there are a few exceptions. The three gemaras, and then listen clearly, carefully to the three gemaras and see if you could find the common denominator. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Nashim chayavot b'mikra megillah. Women are obligated to read the Megillah. Why? And it's the same reason why women are obligated in all the mitzvahs of Purim. Sha'af hein hayu ba'oto hanes. Women were also in the miracle of Mikra Megillah. Next Gemara. Regarding Chanukah candles, a woman has to light Chanukah candles. D'amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Nashim chayavot b'ner Chanukah. Sha'af hein hayu ba'oto hanes. And then Gemara, third Gemara in Pesachim, says that women have to do arba kosas on Lel Seder. Why? Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, nashim chayavot ba'arba kosot, sha'afin hayu ba'oto hanes. What's the common denominator? Right. And they're also the same exact person every time. Three different mesachtas, each one is the same person, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, saying apparently this is his thing. He's an early feminist, and he felt that women have to do these mitzvahs, even though every single one of these is a mitzvah seseh shezman grama, and theoretically every one of these women should be exempt in terms of mitzvahs of Purim, in terms of Chanukah candles, which is also balayla, only certain days, in terms of the Seder, also it's only balayla, only the first night of Pesach. So theoretically women should not have to do these mitzvahs, but afen hayu ba'oso hanes. We've spoken at least a bunch of times about what it means that women were in the miracle. The simple reading is, what does it mean that women were in the miracle? They were saved. They were the ones that were saved. I don't know if that was both saying the same thing or different things. So the simple reason is women were also subject to the Hellenization at the time of the Chashmonaim. Women were also subject to the Gzer of Haman, Laharog, Lashmid, Labidas, Kol Yudiminar, Vatzakein, Taf, Vinashim. And thirdly, when it comes to Yitzias Mitzrayim, obviously they were also in the Shibud. That's one opinion in the Rishonim. The other opinion in the Rishonim says that it's not enough just that you're in the salvation. You have to have been actively involved in causing the Yeshua itself. So by Chanukah we have, was that Yehudis was the one who beat Syrian general. And we have Esther, of course, and we have the Nashim Tzidkanios, Shibizchus Nashim Tzidkanios, Nigal Avosinim Mitzrayim, they're the ones who brought the Geula from Mitzrayim. That's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is a different point. The question is, do women have to eat matzah on the first night of Pesach? Women have to eat matzah. Mideh, clearly midoraisa. Women have to eat matzah midoraisa. Now, what's the reason? Well, I would have said, afin hayubota hanes. If that's the reason why they have to drink four kozes of wine, as the Gemara just told you, that women have to drink four cups of wine because of afin hayubota hanes, so shouldn't that equally apply to the chiyah for matzah? That's what I would think. However, the Gemara tells us that the reason why women have to eat matzah is because chametz and matzah are linked. Anyone who's bound by the lo ta'aseh of chametz, which is every person, men and women alike, is also, if you're bound to chametz, if you have to not eat chametz, you are obligated to, yes, eat matzah. Because chametz and matzah are mirror images. Whenever something could turn into chametz, it could turn into matzah. When something is could turn into matzah, it could turn into chametz. Anyone who's obligated not to eat chametz is obligated to, yes, eat matzah. Wait, why do you have to say that rationale? Why do you have to make up this new rationale that women have a mitzvah to can't eat chametz, so therefore they have to eat matzah? Just say very simply, afin hayu ba'ot hanes. That's one answer. Perhaps it only applies to derabbanans. Not everybody agrees with you. You're saying that matzah is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Perhaps the power of this afin hayu ba'ot hanes, which is a svara actually. There's no pasuk for it. It's completely from the svara. It's just a logical thing that if you were in this, you should commemorate it or do it. Some people say that it's that matzah is doraisis, therefore afin hayubot hanes would not work. Well, let's think for a second. In the Let's take it one step further. I'm sorry. That was regarding matzah. What about regarding sukkahs? So is a woman obligated to sit in a sukkah? No. Anyone here obligated to sit in a sukkah? Not obligated to sit in a sukkah. Now, why don't we say afin hayu ba'ot hanes? Didn't women also have the protection of, however you understand sukkah, whether sukkah is zecher la anani hakavod that protected us, or it's sukkos mamish, whatever version you understand of what we're celebrating by sitting in the sukkahs, were not women protected by those anani hakavod? Were not women protected by those booths that we were able to build in the midbar? Why don't we apply afin hayubos anes to obligate women to sit in a sukkah? What do you say?
Maybe it has to do with Sakana. All the other three examples, Purim and Hanukkah and Pesach, because we were like running away from the Egyptians, we were all in the potential that we could have been killed. And so in the other thing, we're just remembering the Ananei HaKavod, not as much as Maseiros Nefesh. So as a result, we're like, by doing these particular things and the things that we were in the potential of
100%. So the Marami Rotenberg, remember the one who was held in prison? Marami Rotenberg, who was held in prison and he didn't want his body to be redeemed because they were asking too much money. He says exactly what you said. He says that afin hayubot hanes only means when you're in danger and you're saved from a specific danger. It's not just you're traveling through a not cool place and Hashem gave you, some... They did, but I guess it's not the same kind of imminent danger as like we're gonna kill you on the 13th of whatever. It's a different kind of danger, right? I hear what you're saying now. But why didn't anybody say that on Sukkot women were not specifically involved in bringing out about the miracle of protection of the sukkah? The Be'er, yeah, that was Miriam, but the Sukkot, the Anani HaKavod were Bitzchus Aaron. So did women bring about the protection of the Anani HaKavod? Or did they build the booths? Not that we know of. And therefore, maybe that's why, maybe if we assume that in order to be actively involved in the mitzvah, that's what you need to get afin hayu ba'ot hanes. So they wouldn't have to be actively involved. They weren't actively involved when it comes to sukkah. That's why, perhaps, there's no afin hayu ba'ot hanes regarding sukkah. And that's why perhaps women are still exempt from sukkah, because they weren't actively involved. If you would hold the other reason, that they were in the Yeshua, they were in the salvation, they did get the protection. They did get the protection, like you're saying. So we have two answers. We have Alana's answer that Afin Hayubotanes only applies if there's an imminent, clear and present danger, and Sukkos wasn't comfortable. There were little scorpions here and there, but it wasn't like we were about to be wiped out. And the second answer we're giving is that maybe the reason why there's no Afin Hayubotanes is because women were not actively involved. And that's the thing that you have to have, the active involvement of women in order to be mechayev women for Afin Hayubotanes. There's one other answer that Rav Soloveitchik gives for why, and this is actually interesting because there's an indication of Kairo Gneza that supports this. Listen to this. Rav Soloveitchik says that the only time, well, what are the words? Af hein hayu ba'oto hanes. They were in the miracle. It doesn't say af hein hayu ba'oto ha-Yeshua, af hein hayu ba'oto ha-Ge'ula, Afen hayu ba'oto hanes. Says of Soloveitchik, the only time we ever apply this principle of Afen hayu ba'oto hanes is when the mitzvah itself is a mitzvah of, let's think, we have Megillah, we have Hanukkah candles. Let's stop there for a second. What's unique about those two mitzvahs that make them qualitatively different from other mitzvahs? It's Pirsum Anisa, exactly. Hanukkah candles, Pirsum Anisa. Megillah, everything about Mikra Megillah is Pirsum Anisa. So when there is a mitzvah, Pirsum Anisa, that means that the nes is part of, we're not just remembering that Hashem did something nice to us. We're being mefarsim the nes, a nes that you have to be mefarsim. So if they were also in the Yeshua, if they were, women were also involved in that, whatever happened then, so they should have to be mefarsim that nes. What's the only one that doesn't fit? What are the three cases that we said that Afin Hayu Ba'oto Hanes applies to? We said Mikra Megillah, we said Hanukkah candles, and what was the third? Dalet Kosas specifically. Dalet Kosas. Where by Dalet Kosas is there any Dalet Kosas Pirsum Anisa? I mean, yeah, you took us from Cheirus to, you know, you took us from Sheba to Cheirus, from Or, from Afela to Ora, from Sheba to Geula. So there's a little bit, but let's just understand even more clearly. How do you know, what's the litmus test if a mitzvah is Pirsum Anisa? Or let me ask in a different question. What do we say only by mitzvahs that are Pirsum Anisa that we don't say by any other mitzvah? Shechana we say by a lot of mitzvahs. Al Hanisim, that's also true, but when we do the mitzvah at least, Sha'asanisim, besides Asher Kedushanu, either to read the Megillah or to light the candles. Also, we also say Sha'asanisim, which is talking about the Nais, that we're being Mepharis in the Nais. So when you say Sha'asanisim, that's a litmus test to show that this is a mitzvah of Pirsum Anisa. So we say Sha'asanisim by Hanukkah candles, check. We say Sha'asanisim by Mikra Megillah, check. What's the only problem? We don't say Shasanis Ba'arba Kosas, or do we? So just for fun, apparently, there are editions of the Haggadah that were found in the Cairo Geniza that did have Shasanisim for the Dal Kosas, which would make it exceedingly cool, because that would mean that would be our proof in the pudding, that Dal Kosas is 100% a Pirsum Anisa mitzvah, with the litmus test, with the Shasanisim bracha. Clearly, Pirsum Anisa, and Soloveitchik, you know, goes home with $1 million in his pocket, because we have the three mitzvahs that are all Pirsum Anisa mitzvahs are the ones that get Afein Hayu Ba'oto Hanes. We only say Afein Hayu Ba'oto Hanes by mitzvahs that are for Pirsum Anisa. But the problem is that the rest of us who don't live in the Cairo Knesset don't say Sha'as Anisa. So this is actually a discussion. Apparently, I saw this in an article. Rav Amram Gaon, we're going back a long time. Rav Amram Gaon, the Gaonim lived in the time period before the Rishonim. So the Rishonim began the year, let's say, 1000 till 1500, till the Shulchan Aruch. That's the period of the Rishonim, what we call medieval time period. Before that, from the end of the Gemara, which was, let's say, the year 500 or so, till the year, like, almost 1000, let's say 500 to 9, something or other, that's the period of the Gaonim. Not really, sort of. The latter years, 700, 800, 900, those are the years of the Gaonim. So we have very little stuff from the Gaonim. Very, very little. Rishonim, we have lots of Torah from the Rishonim. We have very, very little for whatever reason. Maybe it was political, maybe it was not political, but you know, maybe we were just under pressure from foreign nations, whatever historical reason. We have very little material from the Gaonim. But there's Rav Amram Gaon, who's one of the Gaonim, actually says the following. He says, when you make your Seder and you have your Dal Kosos, do not say She'asa Nisim. You know why? Because you already include that in the bracha Asher Ga'alanu, V'Ga'ala Savaseinu, and in that bracha that we make at the end, right before we eat matzah, towards the end of Magid, we say the bracha Asher Ga'alanu, which talks about the miracles that Hashem did. And he says that since we're saying that bracha, which is a longer bracha and a more complete bracha, if you would also say She'asa Nisim, that would be a bracha levatala. So don't say She'asa Nisim because you're already including that in Asher Ga'alanu. Now wait a second, why does he say, don't say She'asa Nisim because we say Asher Ga'alanu? He should have said, we don't say She'asa Nisim because it's, why would you say She'asa Nisim? Must be, what is he assuming? Must be he's assuming it's 100% Pirsu Manisa. And you should say She'asa Nisim. Like Hanukkah and like Megillah, the only reason you don't is because you already said it in a different form, in a more complex and in a better form. So therefore, don't say She'asa Nisim, it'll be a bracha v'atala. So what do we have? Everything tied neatly with a bow. There are three mitzvahs that are afen hayubatones. All three of them have this component of pirsum anisa, including, as we said, the dalad kosos. And again, those kairoganiza hagadas that have the bracha of She'asa Nisim obviously didn't hold like Rav Amram Gaon. And said you could say She'asa Nisim, but Rav Amram Gaon said don't say that because it's already part of Asher Ga'alanu. So that's the piece as far as Afein Hayubotones. Any questions about that part? Matzah. I guess matzah is not. Matzah does commemorate something. It commemorates that we ate this bread when we.
Women are
obligated, but not because of Afein Hayubotones. A totally different reason, the fact that, correct, because since they're obligated not to eat chametz, because women are obligated in all the lota assays, including chametz, therefore they're also chayv in the flip side. Same thing with keeping Shabbos. Why do you have a mitzvah of the positive mitzvahs of Zachar? Why do you have to hear Kiddush? It's a mitzvah that says Shazman Grama. Why do women have to hear Kiddush? Because since you're in the Shomer, you're in the Losa says, you can't violate Shabbos, you can't do Malacha on Shabbos, you're also in the Zachar. So Shomer and Zachar are mirror, so too, Chametz and Matzah are mirrors. If you're bound by not eating Chametz, you also have to eat the Matzah. Okay, that's the end of that discussion. That was a little more lumdus, a little bit less halachic. Now I'll go back to our normal format of halacha. Okay. We're going to go through a bunch of things. We're going to jump around, going through Matanos Avionim, Mishloach Manos. I don't remember exactly what I said last year. I didn't have clearly written in my notes what I did last year and what I didn't do, so I apologize if some of this will be repetitive from last year, but I know there's just a handful of people. There are a lot of people who weren't here last year, so if you were here last year, it'll be a little bit of review, and even if you, and nevertheless, we'll still have some new things also. Okay, so as I mentioned last week, if anybody wants to fulfill their mitzvah of Matanos Levyonim, you could give the money to me. I will have it sent to Eretz Yisrael through Odio Seif Chai, which is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful organization. And you could either give me money today, or you could call me and tell me, and I'll write it down. Or if you're with friends at the Sa'uda on Thursday afternoon, on Purim, and somebody says at like 3 o'clock, oh, I didn't give my Matanos Levyonim, so you could give them my phone number, call me, and I will take care of that on their behalf. How much? Did we talk about how much a person should give last week? We did not. Okay, so the way people usually like to say it is the way people like to say in the yeshivas is that it's the amount of a su'uda. Meaning, whatever a su'uda costs, to how many people? Matanos le'evyo, nim, plural, to two different people, the amount of a su'uda. So what's a su'uda? So If you go to Eretz Yisrael, so there's a falafel and a drink. How much is the falafel and a drink? Not as cheap as it used to be. 30 shekel? That much? Nah. 15 shekel is for the falafel, and another 5, let's say 20. I think 20 shekel is, unless you, I don't know where you get your falafel, maybe. Shawarma, okay, that's more like chatchila, yes, 100%. Yes, that would be right for shawarma. So, around there, so again in America, what is 2 slices and a Coke? $6? Around there, 7, whatever it is around there, a person should ideally try to give 2 aniyim the amount of a meal. That's certainly the cheapest of the cheapest meals. Now, me'ikar hadin, that's not really the bottom line halacha. The Ritva says explicitly, and a lot of people don't know this, that even a pruta is sufficient to fulfill the mitzvah matanos avyonim. How much is a pruta? A pruta is more than a penny, but less than a nickel. And somewhere in the middle, I don't know exactly, probably depends on the price of silver at any given moment. So let's assume around 3 cents, 4 cents, I don't really know. But me'ikar hadin, that's what a person needs bottom line. So if a person's pressed for cash, you gave a nickel to one poor person, you give a second nickel to another poor person, you fulfilled your bottom line obligation, which is hard to imagine because you can't buy anything. You can't even buy a bubblegum for a nickel anymore. Like it used to be, whatever. Okay, we're not going to go there. So the goal is to try to give at least 2 people a shear of a meal, but that's not even the lechatchila. That's not even the lechatchila. The lechatchila is that the word we have interesting use of words. We have mishloach what? Manos, and we have matanos levion. What's the difference between a mana and a matana? When it comes to mishloach manos, you just have to give a mana. Mana is a portion. A portion is proportion. Matana is the word nesina always has the connotation in rabbinic literature in psukim of doing something generously. It's always supposed to, it has the connotation of a what's called a matana chashuva. How much is a matana chashuva? Something that's a reasonable, respectable amount that a poor person would receive. So again, if you're strapped for cash, we're not talking about you right now. But a person who's working, a person who has money, who has means, ideally should give a meaningful, reasonable amount of money, both for them based on their finances and for the person who's receiving it. So if you're giving a lot of times matanos avyonim is not just to somebody who's, you know, homeless on the street. Sometimes you give matanos avyonim to people who can't make their mortgage payments, and, you know, giving them $6 to somebody who can't make his mortgage payment or her mortgage payment or can't, you know, pay for whatever other medical needs that they have, you know, $6 is not really anything. So therefore, ideally, the proper thing would be a matana chashuva for the giver and the receiver, and that would be the ideal way to do the mitzvah, again, for those who are working. Obviously, we learned when we were learning the halachas of Meiser, that anything that you are obligated to pay, you're never allowed to use ma'aser money for. So if you have to give matanos avyonim, which you do, every Jew has to give 2 sets of matanos avyonim, so therefore you can't use your ma'aser account to pay for those 2 basic matanos avyonim. So let's say you want to give $25 or $50 to one poor person, $50 to another poor person, that's a matana chashuva, clearly. So I give the first $100, I cannot use my ma'aser account. If I want to give $300 more for matanos avyonim, that could come from my ma'aser account, because that's not something that I have to give. Okay, any questions about matanos avyonim? Yeah. You tell me. Do you have to give matanos avyonim to a Jew? What does the pasuk say? Does the Ish L'Re'ehu say the word Re'ehu after both? Does it say Ish L'Re'ehu at the end of that pasuk? You can check. We'll continue, but Rina will check the Megillah in Perek Tess, I think, towards the end of Perek Tess. Yeah, Ilana.
If you set aside tzedakah money, like in a separate side, like you just put it not in the tzedakah box specific one, just the general tzedakah box for yourself, could you officially, if you had given, you said you were giving tzedakah, could you use some of that tzedakah?
So I don't know. You're saying if you have money that's designated for tzedakah, could you then use that as matan savion? I'm not sure, because again, I'm talking about the bottom line, the first, whatever, the first $10, $20 to fulfill the mitzvah of matan savion. Could you if you have money that you already designated for tzedakah, and now you're going to give it to them on? I'm not sure.
It's better to stay away.
I'm not sure. Okay. Not better. I don't want to say better if I'm not sure. Okay, yeah.
It only says each to the after
Shalom. Could you read us the pasuk?
Sure.
Or that. Kayami
Masher Nafu Bahab Meyudim Meyudim Oyavim Shalom. Meyudim Oyavim Shalom.
Oh wow! So the pasuk says, "Meshlach manos ish le'ehu u'matanos le'avyonim." The pasuk specifically sounds like "Meshlach manos" must be to a Jew. If I read the pasuk properly, for "ehu" means your fellow Jew, which it means "v'hafta re'echa kamocha." And other places where the word "re'ehu" in Chumash is referred to a fellow Jew, it sounds from the pasuk that "Meshlach manos" must be to a fellow Jew. U'matanos le'avyonim sounds from the pasuk that does not have to be Jewish. I can't imagine the poskim saying that that's ideal, but it sounds from the pasuk that it should be okay. But again, I don't know. I don't remember what the poskim say. But I would assume it's better to give it to a Jew if one has the opportunity. Okay, I want to remind us of a beautiful, beautiful idea that we learned last year, because it's just so beautiful. And if there is anybody who needs to have a Dvar Torah to say on the Purim Suda, you'll never go wrong with this, unless people heard it last year, in which case you need something new. So, Kabbalah Shabbos was created at which point in history? Was created in which point in history?
Part of it was made in Sfat.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
In which point in history? What? What year? Okay, so Shlomo Alkabetz, who's the author of Lecha Dodi, was a contemporary, a real, 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 real contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? A real, real contemporary. So there's a whole big machlokas that we're not going to go into called Chiddush HaSmicha. They wanted to reinstate the smicha, the original smicha, not smicha that we have, like that I have, but like the real smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu. They wanted to reinstate it. Did I ever discuss that here? I never discussed that. Oh, this is such a fascinating... Yeah, we have a minute or two. So it was like this. In 1492, Spain threw out all the Jews, and there were many Jews who stayed in Spain because they had businesses and families, and it's not so easy to pick up and leave. So the Muranos, some of them externally pretended that they were practicing Christians, and of course kept halacha and were Yirei Shemayim, internally. We're not going to get into judgments, and was it right, was it not? We're not in a place to judge. Fine. Anyway, a few years after that, after 1492, over the next decade or two, many of them, some of them made their way to Eretz Yisrael. And they realized that some of them might be Chayiv Kares. And they were Yirei Shemayim, through and through, from beginning to end, and at least certainly now, perhaps earlier as well. And they realized that they were terrified of getting Kares, because of whatever things they might have done, they might have bowed down to or said, Chayiv Kares. Now, if a person's Chayiv Kares, the Gemara tells us that if Beis Din in this world gives them Malkos, then Hashem up above does not, Beis Din Shamal does not give them Kares. So they came to the Gedolim of Tzfat and they said, we want Malkos. Give us 39 lashes to exempt us from the Chayiv Kares that were Chayiv Bidei Shemayim. Incredible. Just people think like this. And there's one problem. The problem is that in order to give Malkos any corporal punishment, anything that involves any death or physical punishment, could only be administered by a Beis Din of what's called Smuchim, people who have Smicha from that unbroken chain, starting with Moshe to Yeshua to Ish Mi Ish until Moshe Rabbeinu. That chain was broken in the time of the Romans, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, in the time of the Amoraim, and let's say the year 150 or 200, around there, that's when the chain of Ish Mipi Yosh from Moshe Rabbeinu was broken. The Romans didn't let us continue that. That's around also the time, give or take 100 years, that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, oh my gosh, I better write the Mishnah down. There's all the same point, because Smicha was broken, the traditions were being, you know, were harder to happen. So all that historical things, all those historical events were relatively, you know, within the same 100 years or so. I might be off a little bit. And they said, let's figure out a way to reinstate this constant. Well, how do you reinstate Smicha if the whole point of Smicha is that it's an unbroken chain for Moshe Rabbeinu? Once the chain has been broken, you can't reinstate a broken chain, right? If you have a broken chain, it's broken, so you can't fix it down there because it's not attached over here. However, there's a Rambam who says that if you have all the Chachamim of Eretz, all the Chachamim of the Jewish people, and who are they? People who live in Eretz Yisrael. Plug for making Aliyah. Okay. So if you have all the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, I think he says it like that, then, and they all agree to sort of reinstate Smicha, Smicha can be reinstated. So therefore, there was a Beis Din that whoever the Gadol, I think the Maribe Rav, I'm mixing up my names, who is the Gadol in Sfan and who is the Gadol in Yerushalayim? That's before the Arizal. No. Before the Arizal. One of the Gadol was Maribe Rav. I don't remember if he's the one in Eretz in Tzfat or in Yerushalayim. What happened in Tzfat is the Gadol of Tzfat, who was the Rebbe of the Shulchan Aruch, gave smicha to a few of his Talmidim, the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, the author of Lecha Dodi, who we're about to mention. Was it Bezalel Ashkenazi, maybe, who's the author of the Shita Mekubetzes, also in that group? I don't remember. I might be mixing up a name or two. And then, so they reinstated smicha, and then all of a sudden they got an email from Yerushalayim saying, wait a second, you guys up there in Tzfat think that you're everybody? I'm the Gadol Hador, and I'm living in Eretz Yisrael. Yerushalayim was not the Torah center at that time in the 1500s. And I don't remember, was it Maharibe Rav? I don't remember who it was from Yerushalayim who said that I disagree with you on this gigantic, this was called the machlokas, the gigantic machlokas of the Chidush HaSmicha, the Mechadish, the concept of Smicha. Gigantic, gigantic machlokas. So in that, those people who got Smicha, this attempt to make a real, genuine Smicha, again, one of them was Rosh Shlomo Alkabetz, what was his name? I just said Shlomo. Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz. How do you know his name is Shlomo Halevi? The acrostic of the first letter of Lecha Dodi is Shamar Vizach, Shamar is Shin, Likras Shabbos, Lamed, Mikdash Melech is Mem, He is Hisori, Halevi. Okay, Shlomo Halevi. So Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz wrote a sefer called Manos Halevi, because he's a Levi. And in there he says the most beautiful idea. When Haman, please remind me if I said this last year, Haman comes to Ahasuerus and says, we got to kill these people. These people, these Jews, they're no goodniks. Why are they no goodniks? So if you look in the Chumash, in the Megillah, it says, Hine am mefuzar u'mefarad bein ha'amim, something like that. So in other words, what he's really doing is he's saying that these are people who are divided and splintered and scattered, and, you know, they can't even keep it together among themselves. Ein shavel ha'nicham, but they don't deserve to be. If they can't, you know, they're arguing and splintered and mefuzar u'mefarad bein ha'amim, they don't deserve to be. And let's kill them. Says Rosh Shlomo Alkabetz, if that was the tevia against Bnei Yisrael, that we were so splintered and divided, that's why we deserve to have been destroyed, then what is the tikkun for such a divisiveness and a disunity? Well, let's think about it. What is the unique aspect of Mishloach Manos different from all other acts of chesed, basically, that we do to other people? We give tzedakah, we lend people who are in need, that's another mitzvah to say d'oraisa. We're mevaker cholim, we're menachem aveilim, we do chesed shel emes to people who, to bury people. How is Mishloach Manos not like any of those?
It's like people are basically, one, they don't really need it.
100%.
And two, they're on your level.
100%. All the chesed that we do is to help people to fill a need. That's, people are lacking something, chola needs, whatever. An avel needs whatever. A dead person needs to be taken care of. A poor person needs whatever. A person who needs a loan needs a loan. This is, when you give a present, like, it's sort of like the whole concept of giving flowers. Why is it that people like flowers, or they say women like flowers and like diamonds, rubies, sapphire? Why? That's the point. There's nothing to do with them. They're absolutely useless. Right? So that's why they become a gift and they make people happy, because they're absolutely... If I would like come home and bring my wife's sweetheart, I brought home some milk and orange juice. How much did it cost? Well, two things of milk, if I buy Chalav Yisrael, it cost me, let's say, $12. And a thing of oranges, another $3-$4. So I've spent $15 on milk and oranges. And then, but so I'll say, okay, thanks, Uri. And then if I would come home with $5 bouquet of flowers with like one little rose, it's like, oh my gosh, you bought me a rose. Well, why? Why? $15 for everything? The answer is because it's meaningless. That's why it's meaningful. So that's what Rishon HaKabbat says. The whole purpose of Mishloach Manos is that somebody does not need anything. He's on your level, 100%. You're not feeling any lack, any need. And you're giving it. What does that do? That is the way we create friendship and love and Ahava and Achva. And that is the tikkun for the Tviya against Bnei Yisrael in the very beginning of the Megillah of Hinei Amif Uzar Mufarad Bein Ha'amim. Accordingly, we come out with a gigantic kula, actually. If he's right, if the Manos Halevi, Rosh Shlomo HaKabbos is right, the concept of Mishloach Manos has nothing to do with... All it tells you is that you have to give things that make you close to another fellow Jew. So if I would, for example, if you would send me a tie and a pair of cufflinks, I'd be very grateful. That'd be a beautiful Mishloach Manos, according to Rosh Shlomo HaKabbos. However, a few hundred years before Rosh Shlomo HaKabbos lived the Trumas Hadashim. Why do we like the Trumas Hadashim's Shilas? Because he wrote the questions himself. So you can not only learn from the answers of the Talmud Chacham, you could also learn from the questioner, because sometimes questioners are dopes. They just ask big people. Here the questioner himself was a Talmud Chacham, so you could learn from his questions. So the question of the Trumas Hadashim, which we'll learn from his question, is Bnei Adam HaSholchem L'Chavreim, people who sent to their friends Bipurim, Chalukim, shirts, Usdinim, and sheets, otherwise known as ties and cufflinks, etc. Yotzi midei mishloach manot olo. Could you fulfill mishloach manos with a tie and a scarf and a sweater and a brand new pair of socks or boots? Says the Trumas. Now, I think the Rishon HaKabbos, who says the whole purpose of mishloach manos is to make people happy, you make me happy, you did it. I would think. Says the Trumas Hadashin, absolutely not. The whole purpose of Mishloach Manos is so that every Jew should have the ability to have a Seuda. Chachamim instituted a Takana, that's sort of a subset, subcategory of the mitzvah of Mishteh, that in order to ensure, it's like an insurance policy that every Jew should have a Seuda, we will make sure that we'll give Mishloach Manos to ensure that every fellow Jew in the world has the ability to make a Seuda. So if we stop there, there are going to be lots of differences. I think we talked about a few of them between these two approaches. Rosh Shlomo HaKabbos says the whole purpose is to what? Create love, happiness, joy. According to the Trumas Hadashin, it's for what purpose? What's the purpose of Mishloach Manos? So you can have a Seuda. What are you going to give? Mike and Ike's? Jawbreakers. Who here is Kaveh Seuda on Jawbreakers? Okay, I guess not. So I guess we can't give Jawbreakers according to the Trumas Hadashin. What? They take too long to eat, yeah. You're not going to go to the bench, right, by Shkia, okay. So, according to Trumas Hadashin, this is Lechatchil, and I do urge you, at least your first, how many, you're only giving one Mishloach Manos, Nikon Adin. You can give as many as you want, but you only have to give one Mishloach Manos. One person gets a basket with two food items in it, and at least one of those baskets, perhaps your first basket, you should consider giving foods that is appropriate for a meal, not a pack of Mike and Ike's and a... Help me. And a Hershey bar, yes.
Does it doesn't have to be two different brachas? Or
that is correct. It does not have to be two different brachas. It's not like your kindergarten teachers taught you. Or even your 6th and 7th grade brachas, and the proof is the Rambam. The Rambam tells you what is the mitzvah Mishloach Manos, and he says, Shnei Mine Basar. As far as I remember, bologna and pastrami is the same bracha. And the Rambam says that is the classic Matanos Lavyon, Mishloach Manos. It comes from the following. It comes from the fact that it has to be very specifically and precisely shnei minim. It has to be shnei minim. It cannot be the same food. You cannot give a pack of turkey breast and another pack of turkey breast. That will not fulfill the mitzvah whatsoever. And therefore, that's probably where it came from. So, the poskim talk about, you know, where else do you have to find out whether something is the same min or different minim? What other area of halacha? What? We did that. In Borer. In Borer, there's the famous question that the poskim talk about. If you have a platter of chicken, of pulkies, and chicken breasts, and thighs, so is white meat and dark, who here eats white meat? Who here eats dark meat? It is true, yes. I think men like dark meat more, and women like white meat more, right? Cause, okay, there we go. Baruch Hashem. So for you, it's not Borer, but for you, you won't be... So the same question in Hilchas Borer, is it considered two minim if you have a tarubis in a platter? Could you separate them? Well, if it's one min, you're allowed to separate if it's one min. It's just apples from apples. But if they're two different minim apples and oranges, you can't. Same in Shiloh here. Could you give a top and a bottom? If we assume it's two minim, you can give a top and a bottom. If we assume it's all one min, you cannot give a top and a bottom. That's a great question. I don't really think any of us care about the halacha because... It's just a cute idea to think about. I'll tell you a funny story that happened about 4 days ago. So my wife and I were sitting on the couch last Motzei Shabbos. Last Motzei Shabbos, trying to figure out, she has to figure out what to buy, so we'll be able to... We always try to figure out a Mishloach Manos that you don't have to sort of do on Purim, because Purim is just a very busy day. So what could we do before Purim that will be... So we realize we have Google Express, and we figure we'll do something, food. I told her again, like I always do, that I'd like to do something that's something that could be part of a meal. So if you come to my house, you'll see what that is. So some food that could be used in a meal. And then figured something that, we're giving a lot of them, it sort of adds up. We're going to be, a lot of people come by on Purim. So we figured, Google Express, we have these like seltzer bottles that we get from Google Express. You don't even have to schlep it after work into the car, up to the sixth floor, in the car, out of the car, especially if you're buying other things. Google Express, straight to the door, and seltzers are on. So, okay, so we got seltzers. After we ordered 3 cases of seltzer, that's 36, or was it four cases, which is 48? I don't remember. I looked at my notes that I am sharing with you, and I see the following. Rebel Yashiv, flavored soda is considered a min, but not seltzer/water. So that's just not a min. It's not a food. So if you happen to get a seltzer when you come by, you will know that you're not the first one to knock on the door. But I have another tzadlahaka. We ordered flavored seltzer. So flavored seltzer, I'm wondering, it's really soda just without the sugar. It's flavored, just without the sugar. That's why it's not sweet. So we're not going to use it for our purpose. We won't, our ikar din that we're not going to be able to do something other than that. But just something to consider. And last year, I told you the story of when I went to Rebel Yashiv. My shana, when I went to Rebel Yashiv with the sparkling wine. Okay. You see, that's me. Yeah, I know. I just wanted to, you see, they're all like... So I wanted to meet Rebel Yashiv Zatzal when he was alive, obviously. Otherwise, it would be very awkward. And I had to fabricate a shayla because it's also awkward to like, Shalom Aleichem, how are you doing? Good, what's your name? I'm saying he doesn't have time for that. So basically, when people would come to Rebbe Yashiv, he'd be sitting at his Gemara, and like, you ask your shayla, you shoot a shayla, he shoots an answer, next person shoots a shayla, and it's a shot after the shayla, and then he's back in his gemara. He was back in his gemara. So I fabricated a shayla. The shayla was, whatever, it doesn't matter what my shayla was, but while I was there, his shamish, who people used to funnel questions through, I think it was with Morgenstern, asked him something, could he make kiddush on sparkling wine? And the answer that he said, I don't remember the exact Yiddish words, but the answer he says, it's just wine mit a bissel, how do you say air? Luft. It's just wine with some air inside, or carbon dioxide, or air. So it's wine. Wine is wine. It's just a little, they put a little air inside. So according to that, I reasoned. That's what he said. According to that, I reasoned, what's seltzer? Just water with a little air inside. So, accordingly, seltzer should not work. So it makes a lot of sense that Eliyahu said here that seltzer doesn't constitute a sufficient min for mishloach manos.
It has to be in a basket?
It does not have to be in a basket.
No.
I never saw any source to say that they have to be held together by anything. I'm not saying no, because I don't know. But I don't remember seeing anywhere that, certainly not the basic Rishonim, certainly not the Shulchan Aruch, I don't think the Mishnah Berurah either. Maybe there is somebody says here or there that you should put them in something. I don't know of any source. But my wife says it's tacky to give two things and just hand them to somebody. She says that's, so therefore... therefore you shouldn't. So I had a great idea. I said, okay, you don't have to get bags and baskets. You could just tie ribbon. So we bought ribbon. Yeah, so we bought ribbon and we'll see if it works. Let's finish off with one more point. Okay. A beautiful proof. Following. Question: could you fulfill the mitzvah of mishloach manos by giving a katan? Right. Let's say you have a niece, a nephew. Better stick to a niece. Better lechatchil. The Rama says a woman should give to women, men should give to men to avoid problems of mistaken kiddushin and such. So, could you give to your niece? You know, she'd appreciate it. You know, there's a little kid next door. She'd be so happy to get some candies, or challahs and pastramis, whatever else you're giving. So, could you give to a katan? So, I saw the Aruch HaShulchan says has a beautiful proof. He says, I think you are yotzi if you give to a katan, because it's pasuk says mishloach manos ish l'rei ehu. Now, listen to what the Aruch HaShulchan does, and just see how all of Torah is interconnected. In Bava Kama, it talks about goring, cows goring, oxen goring. The ox gores this ox, and the ox gores that. So in that context, talking about oxes goring certain things, it says, ki igof shor ish es shorei ehu. If your ox gores your fellow's ox. The Gemara Bava Kama says that if your ox would gore a child's ox, a child's possessions, right? You ram your car into a child's car. That would be the modern equivalent. So you are chayev. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, what was the word over there? Ki yigof shor ish, a shor of a person, meaning your shor, gor is what? Yigof as shor, rei ehu. And the Gemara understands that includes even a child's possessions were damaged. So you see that the Gemara understands that the word rei ehu in the Torah refers to even a child. Let's translate that word rei ehu, meaning a child, to us, to mishloach manos ish le. Rei ehu includes even a child, and therefore, says the Aruch HaShulchan, one can give mishloach manos to a child, because a child also is rei ehu. Let's finish off with one interesting idea. Let's say you're making a suda, and you're really busy. Not only are you very busy making a suda for days and days and days because you're having a lot of guests, but it's also a lot of money. Especially because the Rambam says you're supposed to have bedavka basar. The whole question of chicken even works for Purim. Some say that it is lechatchil to have specifically. Those of you who have been in my house know that we have chicken on Shabbos usually. Chalons we have meat, but if for whatever reason we had a power of a chalons, so usually we have chicken. We don't necessarily have meat every Shabbos meal, but we're very, very makbid for Sudas Purim to bedavka yes have meat. The Rambam says basar, specifically, is the nature of the su'uda for Purim. So, if you're having a lot of guests, it can be very expensive and takes a lot of time. You don't have time or you don't want to spend extra money to also do mishloach manos. Could you just fulfill your mitzvah mishloach manos? Hey, you're hosting 10 people, 5 people, 1 person, and you're going to give them meat and kugel. That's 2 minim, according to all opinions. And it's definitely for su'uda because, hey, you're serving them a su'uda. Could hosting somebody be considered a fulfillment of mishloach manos? Or do you need to send them stuff? So there's a very ambiguous line in the Gemara Megillah that says that there were two Amorayim, two brothers, actually. I never noticed that. Abaye, the son of Avin, and Rabbi Hanina, the son of Avin. I never realized they were brothers. So I guess from here you see that you could fulfill Mishloach Manos to your brother. Sister, I guess. Fascinating. Anyway, these two brothers would switch the Seudas one with another. That's what the Gemara says. We're not really sure what it's teaching us. Rashi says, you know what it means? It means that this year, A would eat at B's house. And that's how he would, that's how B, the guy whose house was his hosting, would fulfill Mishloach Manos. The next year, they'd eat at the other guy's house. And that's how the other guy would fulfill Mishloach Manos. So, according to Rashi, hosting a meal does constitute Mishloach Manos. That's Rashi. According to the Ran says, no, it doesn't mean anyone's hosting. It means two people, neither of them could afford to buy Mishloach Manos. So what they do, picture this. Two people go to grandma's cookie jar or the pizza place. Neither of them could buy lunch for themselves and somebody else. So they have a very smart idea. They take out $5 from their pocket. They say, I'll buy lunch for you, and you buy lunch for me. That's what it means that they switched seudas. You bought for her, and she bought for you, so each of you paid only $5 and you got lunch, which is what you would have done without Mishloach Manos. But since you did it for somebody else, that constituted Mishloach Manos. If that's the truth, if that's what it means, then you don't see anything about hosting specifically. You just see that if you buy somebody a meal, that constitutes a Mishloach Manos. So therefore, Halach L'mayis, it's a Machlokas Rishonim, whether or not hosting constitutes a Mishloach Manos. But I always have in mind that, certainly according to Rashi, who said that one of them would host the others, and that would be how he did Mishloach Manos. So I have in mind when I do host my students, when I host our guests for Purim, if you have any guests or your family's having guests, you should tell your mom, your dad, whoever's hosting, or your friends, that you should have in mind that this hosting of all the people who are, they're having is also should also be a fulfillment of Mishloach Manos. Question.
Yeah, what if you're going somewhere?
100%. That's the ideal way of Mishloach Manos. That's fulfilling even the Trumas Hadashim. You're giving them food for the meal. That's the ideal way of Mishloach Manos. So if you're going to cook, if you're going somewhere for Susa and you're bringing them, you know, don't you know you're making for a lot of people? I'll make a kugel and dessert. That's ideal. 100%. Yeah.
Can I ask
about Machatzin Hashaka? Machatzin Hashaka. You could ask. I don't know if I'll answer. I don't remember. Do women have to do machatzas hashakal? I don't remember. I have to look it up. I'm sure it's explicit. I just have to look it up. Okay, so either way, we should all be zocha to the simcha of Purim. We should be zocha to the freilichkeit of Purim. We should be zocha to, like the Rambam says, that the main simcha of Purim is to make sad people happy. Matan Savyon, we should be the main mitzvah of Purim because when you make sad people happy, that's being dom l'shechina. If you're godly, then you're a happy person, because you're not a person, you're happy, whatever. Okay, Frelchim Perim.